It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is the audio sidekick to the video and newsletter. You can sign up on accessofeasy.com. This is number 342. My name is Joey. That is Len. Buddy, what is going on over there?
Yeah, just preparing for the big snowstorm today. 342. How many have we done? I'm just trying to figure out.
30, 40? I don't know. Something like
Has
that.
It been a year or almost a year?
So it's not maybe sure. 8 months. 40 would be a little more than 8 months. We've been doing it for 8 months. I don't know. Maybe not.
I can't remember. You know, time flies with just what's going on in life and then what's going on with our other show and then Bitcoin and so much more. Man, we're going to be closing in on a year very, very soon. We should do some sort of celebration for that. Pop champagne, caviar.
Friday morning. Yeah,
big party.
7:45. Good luck.
Mimosas for everybody, right? For all two of us.
Yeah, sure.
Nobody else is up at this time doing this stuff. But
give me the virgin mimosa. Sure, yeah, let's do it. So we got lots to talk about today. Five big stories. If you want to read the rest of the stories, though, you can just go to accessofeasy.com or sign up for the newsletter. Like I mentioned, the quote of the week last week, Len, it's only because of their stupidity that they're able to be so sure of themselves. That's by Franz Kafka. Rick is the winner. Congrats to Rick. Nice job, buddy. This week's quote, the battle against socialism is more than the attempt to replace economic error by economic truth. It is a battle for moral and spiritual values. It is precisely socialism which promotes universal dependency on the state and the neglect of all primary duties. If you know who that was by, without Googling, of course, put it in the comments and you get your next round of domain or hosting renewal on EasyDNS, which is great. Freebie there for you if you know who that quote was from. So, Len, where do you want to start today? We got five, like I mentioned, stories, latest in data breach and overreaching. I'll kick it over to you, buddy.
Yeah, we'll go over to France where there was a massive data breach that exposed the personal information of around 43 million French workers. That's a significant amount of the whole population. And the breach is impacting two French agencies. And one, you know what, I'm not going to pronounce the two. But one is a French employment agency, and the other is a government employment service supporting people with disabilities. So those are the two agencies. What they do, the names, I'm not going to bother pronouncing it.
They're not even very creative. France travail, like that. I think that means like French work, France work.
Yeah, working French, work French.
Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know. And one out of five.
Well, come on, that's I have nothing to add. Whatever. So the data breach. This comprises of some serious information here. Remember, we're talking about some employment agencies, and so it includes names, social security numbers, date of births, email addresses, postal addresses, phone numbers. With that information, you could cause a lot of damage to an individual. And the fact that it's over 40 million people had this information stolen, that's very scary stuff. And France Data Protection Agency, CNIL, they're investigating this breach to see if the companies, the agencies, because they're going to follow up with EU security regulations to see if they followed them. And what's very interesting here is these breaches, at least the first one, took place in February 6, 2024, to be specific. But people weren't notified until March 13th, 2024, more than a month later before people were notified what has taken place. So now all these people out there that are looking for work, they've got to be on the lookout for identity theft or even suspicious job offers. And given the amount of people impacted that are part of the employment agency, these are people looking for work. So they got to be in the lookout, and it's got to be very concerning for them. So every time now they get approached by a potential employer, they got to scrutinize that notification, that email, that communication with a fine tooth comb, because it could be something that's trying to harm them in the future. So number one, there could be identity theft through all this, identity theft fraud. Also, there could be social engineering attacks. You know, they could be trying to approach these people and just trying to, with social engineering attacks, to try to get more information and to try to further damage these people's information, identity, and create more fraud. Because so let's talk about identity theft. So this is easy one to figure out why this is a big problem here. It's when somebody uses a stolen social security number to obtain credit card loans, other loans, or other ways to benefit from a person's name. That's simple to do. If you have the information, you just simply apply for credit or for a loan and then go ahead from that. So you can see why that is a huge concern. Mm-hmm. Fraud is another one, because that's using a stolen personal information to make unauthorized purchases or charges. So if you get somebody's credit card information, for instance, you go ahead and make a purchase on Amazon or wherever, and man, you know, you're just getting the short end because you're paying for something, or at least the society is going to be paying for something because those charges are going to be reversed. And the guy that has that information, they have the stolen goods in the end. And the last thing is the social engineering attacks. They could also trick victims into revealing sensitive information simply by clicking on malicious links. So that could really be a cause of concern. So there's basically a good chunk, I think it's around 2/3 of the whole French population has been impacted by this. I can't believe there's so many people that were signed up to these two agencies, but hey, what the heck do I know? So they got to be on a lookout. And again, like, what's really concerning to me is why they took so long to alert people. This isn't just some willy-dilly information that they got, like, just, you know, where they worked 13 years ago or something. This is current information, the names, date of birth. Names, emails, date of birth, phone numbers. Like, this is something that could really impact people. They got to be better at this. But we'll see what happens. Maybe there'll be a lawsuit that comes from this. Who knows? This is the French agency, French government, it looks like, that's involved here. So I mean, they got deep pockets. They could just print money to pay these people and make them whole. So maybe there'll be something coming along those lines, like a lawsuit. Who knows?
There's more likelihood in France, who doesn't really do lawsuits, but does do protests very well, historically. So let's see what they opt for. Interesting stuff here from the article. Let me just give you a quick quote. According to the CNIL, which is the cybercrime sort of branch of, I guess, the government, maybe? Hard to say exactly. But the CNIL noted that a cyber attack on France Travail could have potentially exposed the data of those currently registered on the job seekers list over the last 20 years. 20 years of registrants. And those with candidates based on the platform, the company will notify impacted users directly. How are you going to do that exactly? How are these guys going to notify each impacted person directly? 20 years of user data. The French cybersecurity community has criticized France's Travail security shortcomings, with some professionals surprised the agency took around a month to notify 20 years of users' data being accessible online. That's insane to me. The best part is that the guy got in by impersonating a civil servant in France, and you know, they didn't realize there was nefarious activity going on for some time, even after the breach. This is, broadly speaking, where you see a technique called grinding originate. And grinding is what you do when you have, you know, Joey and Len's address, birthday, social security number, and maybe some other identifiers, right? Some other pieces of information from accounts like these, where you can go now to a bank, or you can go now to other online services, your email, your, your Twitter account, whatever, and start using this information to grind away at what would otherwise be a secure platform. You know, in some cases, people have these, I don't even know if Google still does this, but it used to do this. Like, you have like your secret questions, your three or four secret questions. Well, if one of your secret questions was, what was your first address? And now you have this information from Travail that gives you an address or two addresses that you've used in the past. Well, that's an answer to your Google question. And if you lose your Google question and, you know, have your access to your Gmail compromised or whatever, then you start having more and more problems, right? And so as this grinding continues, expect to see more and more people compromised. Again, I don't think there's any way you can notify 20, you know, years of user data, users to that their stuff's been compromised. People presumably switch email addresses, they move, blah, blah, blah. Good luck. There's going to be a lot of people who find this out the hard way, like you said. And it's unfortunate, but it is the expectation now and stuff like this.
Keep on grinding. There's a recent raid that was conducted by Filipino police on a forced labor cyber operation. This story is nuts. So the operation allegedly tricked hundreds of people into believing that they were employed by an online gaming company. Upon arrival, the workers were forced to impersonate suitors online.
Hey, wait a minute.
and have them participate in romance scam operations. and their job was to manipulate victims into forming an emotional attachment and then extract money from them. So it's a very strange story. So this raid successfully liberated hundreds of people who were essentially victims of cyber slavery. I've never heard that term before, cyber slavery, before, but here we are. And the company they were forced to work for had disguised itself as a legitimate online gaming business. I never heard of that term either, legitimate online gaming business, but here we are. Nine individuals have been charged in connection with this scam center, and it's likely they will face severe penalties for their crimes. I have absolutely no idea how are the conditions of a Filipino jail, but I don't think they're all that desirable. And this event, it's highlighting that there's a disturbing rise in cyber slavery and the manipulative attacks used to ensnare victims. So these romance scams, they're out there. They're trying to exploit emotional vulnerabilities, and it could be particularly devastating given the fact of the way people are growing up nowadays. After 2020, there's a lot of people that are just working from home, staying at home, living at home, and they're not going out these days for a variety of reasons. Well, they may be more apt to be exploited emotionally online, and this is one way that these
you are really choosing your, you're like wandering through a minefield right now, choosing the words to describe this situation here.
Yeah, I'm doing my best, and I'm still alive. All limbs are still intact, and so this highlights you got to be very, very diligent when moving forward online, because there's going to be trying to people out there that are going to try to exploit you and try to you know, try to tickle your romance side. And from online, do it in real life, man. Come on. Do it the old-fashioned way. That way you know that you're not going to get scammed like this. Maybe you'll get scammed other ways and you'll end up without a kidney, waking up in a bathtub full of ice. But yeah, it's just, this is all just crappy stuff all the way around. I never heard of this stuff, this cyber slavery, but man, oh man, this stuff could be really, really brutal for a lot of people.
How do you, like, I'm going to try and tie this into social engineering, because you and me talk about how, you know, in SIM swap attacks, oftentimes it's these like customer service reps who are socially engineered. And to be frank, you and me oftentimes just laugh and are like, how could you ever fall for something like this? You know, how could you ever fall for a scam like that? And I look at this scam, and at first glance, I'm kind of like, man, how did you think you were going to work at a gaming company or an online game company and end up, you know, schmoozing with people under a fake identity to encourage them to do, you know, to send you crypto or to, you know, otherwise send you money, even stuff as significant as human trafficking, it looks like in some cases. Maybe, you know, as time goes on, you mentioned it there, the idea that people are sort of, you know, starving for a human connection in a lot of ways. Maybe as time goes on, these scams not only become easier to perpetrate on people as they become more desperate, but it becomes easier to recruit real people to do these jobs, right? You know, because they're, after all, chasing the same things as the people they're scamming. They just need some additional monetary support. They need some, you know, the human connection. They need all these things that, you know, we're kind of hardwired to go after. And now you're getting this pull on both ends, where you're getting, you know, as conditions worsen, the sort of people who are vulnerable to either side of the scam, it the number increases, does it not? It's kind of weird to think about this, but I think you're kind of heading in the wrong direction here. I'm slowly but surely changing my position on something like social engineering. Very interesting, this story. I had, much like you, not heard of anything like this before. And here we are now, significant raid, nine people from, you know, a couple of different countries. Interesting stuff. I'd be curious to hear the nationality of a lot of the people who were employed by this. You know, are there any Americans? Are there any, you know, people from European countries? Are there Canadians? How desperate are things in those countries that those people took this opportunity at, if they did, right? It's very, would be very telling.
I would have suspected it would probably be most likely local countries coming in. The Philippines, they're not known for having high wages.
No.
And even so, including in something like this, I don't think they're going to be paying extraordinary high wages. So who are they going to be attracting? Probably locals within Philippines, but also just in the surrounding areas. But just my guess. Yeah, we could talk about Malawi, and never talked about them before.
First time. Yeah, first time.
Even on our other show, we've never talked about them. Well, there was a recent cyber attack that impacted their passport issuance system. And I'm going to be brief on this one because there's really not much information here. I tried looking in depth, but I couldn't find all that much. So these attackers, they appeared to have infiltrated the system and deployed ransomware. And it's a type of malware that encrypts the files and demands ransom payment to decrypt them. So this obviously for people that are looking for passports is a huge thing. And also the people that are administering the passport issuance system is a massive thing too. But in response to the attack, the government, they decided to play hardball. And they said, you know what, we're not going to pay these guys. And so they refused to pay the ransom demanded by the hackers. Instead, what they did, they assembled a team of local IT experts. And they got to work and they managed to restore the passport system. They managed to figure out a way. So their efforts were successful. And now it's been brought back online and passport printing services they have restarted in some local areas and it's going to be done throughout the whole nation momentarily. So what I'm trying to get at with this whole story, which is very interesting, is that number one, how did the attackers get into this? Obviously, they had some sort of knowledge, some technical knowledge to enable them to employ the ransomware. That's number one. Number two, how crappy of a ransomware was it that they could assemble a team of IT experts to overcome their ransomware? So it seems like the doors to prevent attackers to come in failed.
Yeah.
And then the people that entered and did their ransomware garbage, they too don't have enough ammo to ensure that they're trying to achieve what they're trying to achieve. So it's pretty funny that there's a lot of failures all around on this one. But in the end, passports are being printed. That's all I got to say about this one.
The crisis of competency, you know, knows no bounds. Whether you're black hat or white hat, you can't get it done. Can't get it done. So interesting. You know, it's funny, the e-passport thing. We talk a lot about CBDCs on our show and sometimes on this show too. We don't often talk about like e-passports and stuff like that, but that's a big honeypot as well that presumably would cause a lot more problems, especially in this sort of current day. Oh, now I'm choosing my words carefully. The current day immigration landscape, right? Digital passports are probably something that will be pushed for in a significant way in the next little while. Whether you agree or disagree with the use of those things, they cause problems, right? When you have honeypots like that, you're going to get people who are trying to infiltrate it, right? And maybe the next time they won't just be a ragtag bunch of incompetent bozos, could actually be a set of people who know what they're doing. Don't just leave when you put together the A team to get them out. So.
And I don't understand why they would attack that particular country's passport service.
Maybe I don't know. So,
and like, were they thinking they were able to make bank on this? I don't know.
Did they just go down the list of like, you know, Wikipedia countries by GDP, pick one with a high enough GDP where you can get something out of it, but low enough that maybe you can't put together a competent cybersecurity team, and they just got in over their heads? Like, that's about my thinking. Got to be something like that, right?
They got to lower their standards the next time they're doing that. So there was a Haiti, cyber maybe.
Because does Haiti pay for cyber attack ransoms? Probably not in the moment.
The lowest on the list now.
Gotta be.
What's transpired.
Gotta be. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I don't want
to. I doubt very much that this guy Barbecue, who's floating around on Twitter, is like assembling, A teams of white hat hackers to help with. Anyway, let's not get in any more trouble. What's the next story?
Yeah. Well, IMF. There's some interesting stuff going on there. There was a cyber attack which impacted the IMF. And this is according to a United Nations financial institution. And in that, there was a report that mentioned that there was a security breach that took place within the IMF on February 16th, 2024. And what was impacted by the security breach were IMF email accounts. And it wasn't a great deal. It was nearly a dozen email accounts, 11 from what I understand, were hacked. So the good news from all this, if you could take away any good news, is that the IMF stated that they take cybersecurity seriously, and they're currently investigating the attack to determine the goals.
These guys just cut and paste the statements from each other, eh? All day, every day.
I feel so good now that they're taking cybersecurity seriously. But they're also trying to determine what were the goals of the attackers and what type of data, if any, was obtained. So at this particular stage of the game, they have no clue what's going on, but to try to stem any sort of ill will, don't worry, we're taking it seriously. And this apparently was the first time that there was a cyber attack against the IMF, at least the first time it's been disclosed,
yeah,
since 2011. So it's been 13 years.
Yeah, sometime, yeah.
So that's a long time since they last reported on a data breach. Who the heck knows how many times things have gone unreported? So with respect to this particular problem, the organization confirmed that they use Microsoft 365 cloud-based email platform. I don't know if that was the weak link in the chain here, if there was a particular way they could manipulate using that cloud-based email platform. That's just something of note. It's still, this stuff is relatively new because it's, you know, it just happened a few weeks ago, and they have no idea what the heck happened. So really, there's not much else I could say about this except, you know what, the IMF, they got pwned.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have anything to add either, except that maybe, you know, in a corporate environment, if you get access to 11 emails with the trigger happy nature of everybody sending emails to use reply all, you could probably get a lot of data with just 11 sets of emails, right? You can get everything from when the next big soup lunch is to, you know, who's hired, who's fired. So, I think the lesson here is don't hit reply all. Probably you have a little bit more security with your emails there when your buddy gets pwned. Other thing that I think is interesting, and we talked about this before, a lot of corporate organizations, private, public, whatever, what they do on the password side is like almost laughably bad, right? This policy of, we will give you a standard password when you register your, you know, employee account with us for the first time, and then you have to change it every, like, you know, 10 days. I mean, it's not actually every 10 days, but it's like every 30 or 90 days. And all anyone ever does is just change the number at the end. So you can get the email accounts. If you know the standard password, you just start, you know, picking away at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. And, you know, maybe throw in a special character. I don't know, but it's like not that hard. And I guarantee that's what happened here. Isn't that a safe bet? Like on ProLine, you know, that's like minus 200 in terms of the odds for what actually caused this leak. That's gotta be it, doesn't it? That's the obvious one to me.
ProLine, that's a term I haven't heard in a long time. You're right. But let's talk about the final story. And it's about the Canadian government's Online Harms Act, Bill C-63. We talked about this, I'm pretty sure, before on this show. And for those who are unaware, what is Bill C-63? This is a piece of legislation introduced by the Canadian government in February 2024. And some of the key points by the government include, just a summary, they are trying to reduce harmful content on social media platforms like hate speech, violent extremism, and content that would incite violence. Mm-hmm. They want to target social media companies, requiring them to take responsibility for the content of their platforms. And they want to take measures to ensure that identity and removal of harmful content will take place. They will also force people, these companies, to develop user reporting tools and be transparent about automated content moderation. There's also a couple more things. Number one, there's the creation of the Digital Safety Commission to oversee the act. And there's also going to be an amendment to the criminal code to expand on hate speech. Hate speech laws. So there you go. That's what they're trying to be done with this law, with this bill. But there's some criticism with respect to this bill and for what they're calling for potentially infringing on free speech. And the critics include a couple of prominent individuals, including one former Supreme Court Justice Chief Beverly McLaughlin, and also author Margaret Atwood. So mm-hmm. These two individuals, they're both voicing their opinion against this. They argue that the act is too broad and can be used to censor legitimate form of expression online. And the government, on the other hand, has defended the act by dismissing any criticism as what they call clickbait. Mm. Interesting. And so the government, they're saying that this act is something that's necessary to protect Canadians from online harms, you know, from hate speech, harassment, you name it. But you also have these prominent people that are saying, oh, this might be an infringement on people's ability for free speech. So you have these two arguments. I believe this is something that is likely going to pass through the House of Commons, because from what I understand, obviously the Liberals are in support of it, and they have enough support because the NDP have said that they are going to be also supporting it as well. So those two alone have sufficient numbers to push anything through the House of Commons. So if you think that this is something that may not pass and become law, it's probably likely it would, unless there's an election really, really soon to have this bill die on the vine. If not, it's going to pass through the House, and it probably will pass through the Senate. It'll take a little bit of time to get this done, but given what I see here, I'm looking at everything, it's probably going to pass, which is, you know what, be ready for it.
This is disastrous, and it's, you know, obviously vague intentionally, and I'm not going to say much else except that in terms of my number of signposts that, you know, a society is collapsing or is on its way to collapse, this is a good one, I would say. I don't want to live in a place where this is the law of the land. I can't say certain things and people can claim that they're afraid of the words that I utter or tweet or type or think, and be persecuted for it. It's, you know, sort of plainly absurd. And, you know, it's a checkpoint for me in terms of where I decide to pay my taxes and use my brain power and all these things. When you pair this with the recent RCMP report about how online misinformation is going to be a source of destabilization in Canada in the next little while, you know, you tell me, these things line up for a lot of people. They do line up for me. And I'll be watching this closely. I know a lot of other people will too. There's a direction that we're headed here that, in my opinion, is not friendly to people like me and people who want to live in a place where things are a little more free and you're not, you know, subject to the whims of the sort of loudest minorities. So, yeah, interesting stuff. I'll be keeping an eye on this for sure in a very, very serious way.
Now, there's going to be what you see in the bill right now may not be what's going to be if it's passed and gets royal assent, because there's a lot of hurdles that have to be jumped along the way. And each time there is going to be recommendations from committees and so forth. So you don't know what's going to be the end result. So there could be some changes that can make it more favorable in your eyes, at least given to where it is right now with the bill. So who knows? There's a lot that could potentially happen with this. But I suspect one way, shape or form, this is going to become law. So I say, be ready for it. If you're not, you might get rugged in the process.
Yeah, I'll be paying attention. Thanks everybody for coming. That was number 342. Don't forget, subscribe, YouTube, podcast, wherever you get your podcast. And of course, the newsletter, accessvz.com. Until next week, take care of yourselves.
Take care.